All right, first let me thank the organizers for inviting me here. So today I'm going to talk about new physics signatures with top quarking. And this is this is based on mainly on this set of work. So here's an outline of the talk. So first I'm going to briefly tell you the some of the motivations that to consider this class of signal. And then I'm going to show you two case studies. One of them is the TT bar missing energy as a decay product of some new physics particle. The other one is the highly boosted top quark. So the first motivation is very familiar. So from a naturalist, so we all know that the largest quadratic divergence in the for the Higgs mass in the standard model is contributed by the top loop, and therefore it's very natural to expect there is some top partner to cancel this quadratic divergence. That such top mass of such top partner should be around the TeV, and with some gauge quantum numbers similar to the top quark. Therefore, the signature of such top quark partner will often involve top quarks. So the second motivation is that the top quark is indeed quite special. Even just for the fact that it's much heavier than all the other fermions in the standard model. So therefore, if there's something unique is responsible for generating its mass, then top quark as a preferred coupling to that something new. So that leads to other kind of new signatures that are involving top quarks. So I'm going to then present to you two case studies. So A is the first one is along the lines of a top partner. So I will be very brief here because it's as you will see it's kind of conventional. And so the second one is along the lines of motivating a heavy top mass, in particular motivated by the top compositeness. Okay. So as you see, all these will present new experimental challenge to identify those signals to make discoveries, because they all feature different kinematics and have different objects, event topology in those events. So top partner. So let me in addition to the top partner, I may also just put in a very familiar additional ingredient, just that there's some discrete symmetry that motivated by satisfying precision tests, the existence of dark matter, and so on. And therefore, that also guarantees that the end product of all the decay chains, some neutral particle that escapes detector. So therefore, the signature in this case I'm going to look at is TT bar plus missing energy. So of course, there are a lot of there are very familiar typical examples of such top partners, such as the stop in supersymmetry, also the T-odd partner in little Higgs models, also similarly the KK top in universal extra dimension models. So in this in stop case, it decays the top plus RSP, and T prime it decays the top plus some neutral stable particle. And so the dominant way to produce those top partners is a 2CD pair production. And so there are two curves. One of them is fermionic top production. The other one is scalar. We see that at around for the mass around TeV, they all have a decent rate to be produced. Okay. So of course we all know this is a just getting produced is a very far away to be identified. So let's think about it. So let's look for these events in the TT bar plus missing energy channel. So there have been some studies in the purely hydronic channel, meaning that both two tops are decayed to hydronically. So I'm going to focus here on the semileptonic channel, which is one of them is actually decayed semileptonically. So the potential standard model background is of course the TT bar itself decays semileptonically. So I also have the missing energy carried over by neutrino. And there's this so-called irreducible background with TTZ with Z goes to neutrino. There's also just a background that I produced, WBBZZ, where W goes to a semi-atomic decay. So I'm going to explore a variety of kinematical cuts and look at the mass parameters in this simple setup to see where is our reach going to be. Okay, so let's start with the simple things. For example, I can just I can have a look at the two example case. One of them, so I start out with a mass of the top partner being a TeV. So I have two cases of the mass of the missing particle. One of them is 200, the other one is 800. So here is the blue is the signal. So you see that the missing ET distribution for the large mass oscillating case is spread out, where the sort of smaller one is more squeezed because that's the amount of phase space you have. And so we see that here are the missing energy distribution for all the backgrounds. And we see that, for example, the irreducible background for TTG, you can probably put a cut on missing energy from around 300 GeV to cut them out. But the real problem is the long tail of the TT bar and the WBBZZ. And you see similar behaviors for other transverse variables such as M effective. And we also see that the most challenging case is actually when the mass gaps become smaller. And this is, of course, very reasonable because in that case, everything is almost produced at rest. The full event kinematics is more similar to the TT bar itself. Okay. So now the question is, can we find ways to improve just cutting on these transverse variables? Okay. So of course, there's still a lot of information we haven't used. For one of them is just a reconstruction. Because, for example, the TT bar background, we know that we have enough kinematical constraints to actually reconstruct the top mass in the semi-atomic mode. Okay, so we should be able to reconstruct both the hadronic top and the semi-atomic decay top. Okay, so you will see a resonance in those channels. Okay. However, for the signal, if I still make the assumption that this is, I can go through the same reconstruction procedure with the assumption that the missing energy is carrying away by neutrino. Of course, in that case, this assumption is very, very wrong. So it's like many, many times I get even unphysical results. Okay, so the reconstructed mass quote is going to be completely spread out. So, but in this case, the failed reconstruction is actually my signal. Okay. So of course we can also try to reconstruct the so-called the top on the hadronic side. This will give me a handle, for example, against this WBBZZ background. Okay. So here this is a plot, the contour plot of the reconstruction both to the top to the top TT bar plus missing energy signal versus the TT bar background. So you see that for the TT bar background, you have it's very concentrated this is a complex mass if you want. So remember, I get many unphysical solutions when I do the reconstruction with the signal. Therefore, you can choose to plot them on a complex point. So for the top TT bar, of course, this is the correct assumption. So you get a reconstruct the top mass concentrated on real axis around top mass. The spread is caused by the resolution. And for the signal, you see it's spread out. You see that, again, the small mass splitting case is more challenging because still it looks somewhat more like TT bar. TT bar.
How are you splitting
the TT bar? TT bar and Pythia. Yeah, plus I thought. So there can also be other additional kinematical features that we can think about. For example, you can One thing that's different is the TT bar event is dominantly more back-to-back, and therefore it's not really recalling against other massive particles. Therefore, if you define some a notion of the direction, so you can take the lepton, for example, lepton B defines a direction, and the angle between that direction and the direction of the hydraulically reconstructed top, you'll find that for the TT bar background, it's more back-to-back, and for a signal, it's more spread out. So you can play with some of those other kinematical features as well. So here is the discovery reach you can obtain. Here are the set of cuts that we used. So on this side, this is a fermionic top planar. So we see that for one TeV top planar with 100 inverse central bound, we can get roughly 5 sigma. And also you see the decreasing of the reach when the mass gap between the top planar and the missing particle becomes getting closer to the top mass. Okay. So here is a similar reach plot for the stop. And it's more limited because the stop has a much smaller range than the fermionic top planar. Okay. So now I'm going to really switch gear, talk about another set of signals, namely the new physics resonance decays to a pair of TT bars. So there are a lot of motivations to consider this kind of signal. So one of them is that if the top is composite, and they will have a large coupling to the other composite resonance. Okay, so a typical setup is in the RS model that I have a right-handed top localized towards the arbor, for example. Okay. So now, so here is the signal versus the standard model TT bar background. Okay. So in this particular model, we consider KK gluon and the production and the decay to TT bar. You see that the signal is actually pretty big on top of the TT bar background. So it is. However, this of course doesn't mean that this is the only background we should consider, and therefore this kind of signal should be very easy to detect. Before I go into that, let me just mention that there is already a limit in this kind of scenario, a new limit from Tavitron. I think this curve is the one that is coming from the KK predicted KK gluons, and this is their limit. Okay, so it's excluded up to about 900 GeV. Sorry. This is the RSKK gluon. This curve is the predicted RS gluon. So they are exactly doing the, sorry. Yeah. Huh? Okay. Sorry, say that again. Yes, what I've just shown you is all parton level. Okay. So I'm going to go into it detail later. So the reason I mentioned here is also what they did is exactly the analysis that I sort of showed you on the previous slide. They just did it and they measured the shape of the environment TT bar distribution. Now, of course, there are much more challenging, a lot of challenges at LHC. First of all, again, standard model TT bar has a very long tail, and these composite resonance can be wide. Therefore, if you are very heavy, so the shape can be the resonance, the shape of the resonance can be distorted. But most noticeably, typically we are actually thinking about the mass scale of those resonance we are thinking about actually pretty high. For example, for the simplest RS model, for the simple RS model that used in our example, if you putting some electric precision constraint. Typically, we're considering the KK gluon resonance to be pretty heavy, 2 to 3 TeV. And therefore, the decay product, that when you produce them on shell, they decay down to TT bar. Each of them are actually very boosted. The energy available is roughly half of the KK gluon mass. So a lot of time, they really won't look like nice isolated event like this, rather than you will take this and boost it, it looks like a cone of energy. So identifying, so here is a little bit, again, qualitative study of the degree of collimation. For example, you can take your isolation criteria to be a cone of delta R equal 0.4, and take a resonance around 3 TeV. So here are the fractions of events that are with different number of objects in it. So for example, the red one is a fraction of the event with only two objects, two cone of object with 0.4 cone of object in it. And you see that that's actually a significant fraction. Oh, this is in the mass window of around 3 TeV with a width of around 500 TeV. Okay, so there are a lot of large fraction of events actually two object like, and you can also ask the question of lepton isolation. It turns out in this case only a few percent of the semileptonic event actually have a lepton isolation according to this criteria. Now, so of course, if the only way we can say this, these are dijets with high environment mass, then of course the dominant background is going to be this QCD dijet, and even at this high environment mass, still roughly a factor of 10 bigger than your signal. And even you can afford to tag the top, highly boost top as Bs, and you do two B tags and so on. The signal, so this is the BB bar background. The signal now is a sort of barely visible, but you can still get a lot of help if you can get some other ways to identify these highly boosted tops. So here are already some other studies. But you can focus on the fact that, say, I don't really have two objects, but maybe I have three objects, I have four objects, although some of them are collimated. So what are the strategies to do in those cases? So here are some studies. I'm actually going to focus on a slightly different route, meaning that if I just say there I have my top jet, how do I identify it as a top jet? Okay, so suppose they are already very collimated or in one narrow cone. So sorry. So the basic intuition that of course we can do something different is that the top decay is a T to BW prompt, and then B and W also decays to hard objects. Okay, so there are roughly three hard initial objects. Okay, so for QCD, you actually have a lot of radiation to build up a jet, a very energetic jet. So again, energetic top was to be a massive jet and with some substructure. So now the question is really, how well can we distinguish them from some QCD jet? We can also, for example, consider, for example, the fact that there's a lepton here. The lepton is still hard, so we can try to design some variables that to take advantage of that. Although that lepton is not necessarily isolated by a conventional measure. Okay, so before I move on to my study, let me also make a comment about, for example, one strategy you can take is to say, oh, I get this fat top jet. Now I'm just going to shrink my cone size. Hope I see more smaller jets. Okay. So, it is going to be useful. It is going to be useful. Although by definition, in this case, all the objects are already highly overlapped. So there should be some kind of limit. Moreover, I think more importantly is that such a strategy is actually not so different from the fact that you start out with a basket and looking for substructure. So the kind of the background that you worry is identical in both cases. So in one case, you worry about whether QCDJs have a smaller structures. In the other case, you worry about whether QCD is capable of producing smaller and closer jets. So that's the, it's the same type of question you have to address. Okay, so the first type of variable one can think about is actually top jet has mass. So it has a mass of around 170 GeV. And however, that variable is still is certainly useful. Okay, so on the other hand, the jet mass, let's say average jet mass of QCD is actually also increasing as a function of the PT, of the hardness of the jet. So basically, the harder it is, you tend to radiate more, you build up more jet mass that way. So here is a plot with a different PT cut on the QCD jet. You see that in the end, when I increase the hardness of the QCD jet, the mass of the jet starts to be more spread out. So here is a plot. If I wanted to say this is the only variable I have, now what is the efficiency versus rejection as a function of my cuts on this variable? Okay, so these are the curves from three representative resonance decays. So my signal model is that I produce some resonance energy decay to highly boost tau. So also for later reference, we can choose three points with the same rejection as our benchmark. You see how they change when we include more variables. So also for the rest of the talk, I'm only going to focus on shape information. Therefore, I'm only going to show you kinematical distributions that's normalized to one. So now let's think about what's different. More about what's different for QCD jet. So the leading order feature for QCD jet is modeled by parton showers. So we consider 1-2 splittings from mother particles split into two A and B. So a shower history, for example, at this splitting point is after integrate over the azimuth angle is characterized by two variables. One of them is the mass of the mother particle, or virtuality of the mother particle, if you want. And also some other variable, which typically you can choose it to be, for example, the energy fraction of the branching. You can take the minimal energy of these two and divided by the energy of the mother particle. Okay. So the statement from QCD is that there's a very definite prediction for the phase space for the distribution of the splitting that's controlled by the so-called controlled by this formula. So here is the 1/T is the collinear singularity in QCD, and this is a priori produced splitting kernel which has an important infrared singularity when z goes to zero. And then this is the well-known pseudocoil form factor. So the leading order feature at this order we should see is that if I somehow I can manage to look at QCD, measure its energy at each splitting, I should see that the z variable I form this way should have an infrared singularity towards zero. Okay, but for top jets, at least for the first set of splittings, that's very different because we know that there's some hard process going on. Therefore, the z from those first branching should be really peaked towards some finite value. Okay. So let me also make a comment on the choice of z. So, of course, so the t variable here is the virtuality of the mother particle. So roughly speaking, this is the virtuality of a jet is captured by the jet mass variable already. So we wanted to find some variable that is maximally orthogonal to that variable to gain most of the information. So if you look at this formula, if I set alpha to constant at the leading log level, So this formula is fully factorized into a piece that depends on T and a piece depends on Z. Okay? However, of course, this is not true in a subleading order. That's part of the reason we can have many, many possible choices of a definition of Z. Also related to the fact that there's ambiguities in how to deal with, how to enforce angular momentum, sorry. How to enforce energy momentum conservation in the parton shower. Okay. So that's why we choose to study a set of Z variables later in the, I'll show you later in this talk. So here is just a demonstration of the effect that I just told you. So first of all, I need a way to sort of follow the showering history. Okay. Of course, I don't have a microscope. I look at the splittings. So the claim is that if you take, so the approach we take is that we say if we take any recursive jet algorithm such as KT, okay? So essentially every the variable we use in those algorithms is actually, you can think about it as approximately the same, as very close to an evolution variable. Therefore, if you build up a jet, you take the look at the clustering history. It's roughly the inverse history of the shower. Okay, so then this given me a way to just look at the clustering history, then ask the question at the first and the second maybe splitting, what is the Z variable is going to be. So if I do that, you see that so this is the top. You see that so this is the jet mass versus some Z variable. So top mass, of course, there's a band of jet mass around the M top, and it's peaked towards some finite value. Okay, so for the QCD jet, the jet mass is spread out, but there is a concentration towards the, in the C direction, there's a concentration towards C equal to zero. So that's just the infrared singularity. As I already mentioned, there are many possible choices at this level. What exactly I mean by Z type variable. So it turns out that they are all at this level, they are all equivalent. They all reproduce the infrared structure of Alfieri-Parisi equation if they reduce to our theoretical expression of a Z variable in the collinear and unshell limit. Okay. So for example, there are a few choices. First of all, I can just take this. And also, I can take the D variable you use in the KT algorithm, and then define another so-called Z-cut variable in this way. And you can also even define a Lorentz. So this variable is not a Lorentz invariant. You can also just make it into a Lorentz invariant variable just by introducing some artificial reference momentum, okay, arbitrary reference momentum. So these are a few choices. So you can study those. This is still the jet mass plot. Okay. So you see again. So yes, the top jet has a hump here, but the QCD jet is also pretty spread out. And so these are the three Z variables I just told you. And you see they all peak towards some finite value, where the QCD is actually peaked towards zero. So different curves here corresponding to different shower algorithms. So we use the PCS 6 virtuality and the PP order shower, and also we use the PCS 8 showering algorithm. Okay, so you see this just shows you that the infrared singularity behavior is a robust feature. Okay, so again, efficiency versus rejection. So here there are two type of resonances, so I can try to optimize according to different kind of Z variables. They all give you similar efficiency versus rejection curves, and this is the combination of the, if I optimize both on the jet mass cut and the Z variable cut. You see, I actually, if you compare to the previous plot, I actually get a factor of 2-3 enhancement in terms of rejection for the same efficiency. Okay. So of course, any of this our modeling of Parton shower is imperfect. Okay, so any numbers I showed you cannot be precise. Okay, so therefore, in reality, we'll of course have to choose. So all we wanted to do here is to propose this kind of variables. In reality, what you have to do is to train those variables on real QCD jets produced at LHC. So for this, you need to ask whether I can have a nice sideband to use to study. Namely, I can go to a kinematical regime where I know the top signal won't distort the shape, and where still but the background still have the similar shape. So for that, you can look at the QCD digest in different bins of invariant mass. You see, they almost all have the same infrared singularity behavior. And so this is the bin that really the top signal reside mostly. So you can use the others as your sideband study. So this is just another D variable. You see the similar behavior. So you can also consider the fact that there are three hot objects. So I have three hot objects really. So far I've only considered two objects. Okay? So the top decays to BW also split. So it's certainly useful to consider those things. On the other hand, so I cannot present to you a clean theoretical argument about the QCD behavior in the 1-2-3 sorting. Okay. Of course, they are still going to be quite useful. We can show that use our own just within our Monte Carlo modeling approximation. So we can, for example, take three clusters from a splitting 1-2-3 splitting and go to the and take the smallest take the combination with the smallest invariant mass. So the idea is that may be the W reference. So indeed, if you form the invariant mass of that combination, you see a W peak versus the QCD background. Okay, you can even define a C-ish variable within that W subcluster, and so you see still, I mean, the WZW is peaked more towards finite value than the QCD, and of course the difference is smaller in this case. Okay, so we can also try to combine the rejection versus efficiency with both 2 and 3 body variables. You see there again some improvement in that regard. So now let me talk about my final class of variables, meaning the with the so-called stuck lepton in the leptonic decay. It means that there is still hard lepton as part of a decay product of the top quark. So the main background in this case is that heavy flavors, their decay also gives you leptons. Okay. So on the other hand, the intuition here is again the B and the charm radiate most of its energy before it decays. So those leptons should be quite soft. Compared to the top one. Okay, the W plus jet background, for example, you can also, in that background, you can have accidentally the decay, the lepton decay from the W overlapped with the jet. Okay? So it's less often. Also, there is some kinematical difference between this and the lepton in top jet. There's also other leptons in top jet. Actually, most of the lepton in top jet you get actually from the decay of B, and the subsequent maybe charm decay. Okay? So this is actually going to be similar to the kinematics of those leptons actually similar to the leptons in the heavy flavor decay. So in the sense these leptons are somewhat less useful in terms of picking up top quark. Okay, So again, so the analogy for the jet mass variable in this case is I can define something called a visible mass, which is combining the lepton momentum with the PB, which is really just the rest of the hydronic activity, the P of the rest of the hydronic activity. You can show that for top quark, there is this nice edge, but it also extends down to very low range. This means that, yes, this is useful, but it's probably good to have some additional handle. So you can define a lot of so-called separation variables. You can have a sort of a Z variable. You can have you can define a variable for the delta R between the lepton and the center of the jet, because the lepton all still have a transverse kick, of a fraction of the top mass, and you can define some X mu variable, which I'm going to come back later. So you see these are the different backgrounds, different colors, and the blue are the two T bars, the heavy boost to the top ones. Okay. So let me just focus on explaining to you one of them, which is the the understanding of this X mu variable. I remind you the expression for X mu is that I take a momentum of mu and dot it into the Pb, which is really the momentum of the rest of the hadronic activity here, and divided by their environment square. Okay, so you can rewrite this mb square over q square visible. So mb square is really the mass of the rest of the hadronic activity. The reason to write this is that in top decay, because the phase space is controlled by m top, and mb square tends to be only a very small fraction of the top mass. Okay, therefore this variable is actually peaking towards one. X mu is peaking towards one, but in heavy flavor decays, the mb square carries most of the energy in this cluster, because the lepton in the end is very soft, only carries a very small fraction of the energy. Therefore, this variable is peaked towards zero, so as you can see. So this is the heavy flavor background, and this is the X mu variable for the boost top. So this is, again, this is the background where, this is X mu variable for the background where you have a W leptonic decay overlap with the jet. In this case, you see the X mu is even larger, okay? Because in this case, there's absolutely no correlation between the energy and then the separation between the lepton and the jet. Okay, so they tend to be more separate. Okay, of course there are also this also means there are other kinematical differences between these two. Okay, so this is the X mu variable for the case where the top decay, but the lepton is coming from the B. So you see that in this case, actually, because the lepton only carries a very minuscule of energy, so the visible mass actually reconstruct top mass pretty well, but X mu behaves more like in the heavy flavor case. Okay, so here again is some efficiency versus rejection. So this is the efficiency versus rejection. If I only against the heavy flavor, if for three different variables, for the Z variable, delta R, and the X mu, we see that X mu has the best result. And this is the combine that variable with the visible mass variable. And this is the efficiency versus rejection against the W plus jet result. This is, again, the combination. Okay. So. So now let me just conclude by saying that I consider a top quark channel to be the most likely place for the new physics to show up. There are a lot of interesting channels with top quark plus addition objects with different kinematics, and a lot more study needs to be done for more efficient top finders. Thanks.
Okay, questions? Questions, comments?
So as I guess you know, Steve Ellis and I and a couple of students have been looking at some of the things over time, I'm a little confused about some of the, I mean, one of the, I guess the most important thing, which you know, is that the curves you get depend very strongly on exactly how you do the study and exactly what you put in. Sure, I know you know that.
Sure.
So I just wanted to understand what choices did you actually make? So when you showed us the TT bar, I assume that what you were doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you were
which TT bar?
I'm sorry. When you were running the studies that you showed towards the end of the talk. With the TD bar resonance.
You have
some sort of mad graph produces the partons, and then you run through Pythia.
That is actually a Pythia sequential Z prime.
Okay.
We just need something
sure.
that gives me energetic.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But you're actually taking the Pythia hadrons and then binning them.
Yes. A fast jet is the clustering.
But it's at the.
Yeah, fast jet just takes.
But it's at the level of the hadrons, or it's at the level of the calorimeter bins.
It's at the level of the hadrons, but we do take into account the segmentation by roughly by saying that I'm going to sum all the energy within the 0.1.1 square.
So it is, you bin it for.
Yeah, but it's a rough approximation of the.
Right.
Yeah.
The biggest worry that I have, I guess, about the substructure techniques, and it's not like I know the answer how to do it right. But the biggest concern that I think we have is that precisely in the region where you have differentiation between the parton shower and the bar is where we're not including the matrix element for harder emission. So the concern is that it may turn out, and certainly our indications have been that when you include that, things get worse.
I would agree with you more on the 1-2-3 variable, and the 1-2-2 I think the leading order is we are just really relying on this feature about the infrared singularity. There are still corrections to it.
But that doesn't change the fact that in the region where you're going to make a cut. So it's certainly true that the typical. That a significant fraction of the QCD jobs will be removed by your cut. The question is how much is left.
Sure.
And the problem is that in the region where things are left is precisely where the matrix element contributes. And so we find a larger background. But it's preliminary.
Thanks. The matrix element typically overestimates that the parton shower typically overestimates the.
It depends
details.
On what kind of matrix element you use, I think. What exactly.
I mean, I know in thrust, right? That the large thrust, it's not a clear comparison, right? But I thought that the tails of the parton shower are not right. The parton shower tends to overestimate cross section rather than underestimate.
It depends on exactly what is what the level of.
I just know from experience that typically interference tends to push things down. I think it really depends on what you actually look at.
Sorry, I'm just talking about hard emission, which we know isn't included.
No, but a parton shower does have
some
hard emission. And all I'm saying is I think the matrix element tends to give you a lower amount of hard emission than the parton shower.
You understand this better than I do. And what's the reason for that?
It's just the interference in the matrix elements is actually negative.
This is for E plus. Sorry, we've got an isolated colored object here. So, why do we expect that?
It depends on what shower you're talking about.
I agree. So right. maybe we should look at it.
Why don't we chat about this?
Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, great. Let's thank Lee and Tao again.
Thanks.
And we'll take a break and be back at 4:00.